Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Stefan Massa. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. You're from Chateau Villa, and we are in Bordeaux still. I've been in Bordeaux for all day now.
No, we're in Bordeaux indeed, or 50 kilometers northeast of Bordeaux, in the northeast of the Libournais. So it's the most northeast terroirs of the Bordeaux Supérieur appellation.
Yeah.
And where we produce dry whites, two, three different, rosé, red oak aged, crémant, white and rosé.
Yep.
And grape juice for the children.
Oh, grape juice for the children?
Also.
Yeah, for your children or...?
First, we begin with the grape juice for our children, but the friends were so interested that now we produce, or it stays slow, a little production, but between 2,000 and 3,000 bottles a year.
Really?
Grape juice.
Oh, lovely.
Just for pleasure. For breakfast, for aperitif.
Okay, what I want to talk about today is get an overview of the winery here, and you're an organic producer, so you've got some quite interesting things going on. You showed me some old winemaking equipment, so it would be great to just have a chat about some of the old equipment, etc. And next week we're going to taste some of your wines and have a chat about some of your unusual acacia, muscadel, and all sorts of interesting things. So just quickly, how long have you been here in the winery?
My parents bought the winery in 73, when I was a child, and my father died quite early, and I make the wine since 82, and 82, beginning 83, I have the rest.
How old were you then?
I was 18, 19.
Oh, that's quite young, isn't it? Yeah.
Yes, it was, but it was also a good learning school. I had a few years agricultural school in Libourne and Montagne. And I hadn't the choice. So there was a lot of work to do. We had a lot of things to run, and the way to make the wine. We sell also the wine to our customers. We are quite directly sales of all our wines. We have any importers in Quebec, for example, and some little in Belgium, but we also sell all ourselves. And yes, we reorganized a little bit those last years, the estate. So we have 12, 13 hectares in production. We make 9 several products, wines, juice, etc. And we today in Bordeaux Supérieur, the size of this estate is what we can call human size. So we do quite all ourselves. Mm-hmm. And we try to make the wines with naturally the Bordeaux grape varieties, with each wine on his terroir. So we have the places to make the rosé, the white. We have 5 or 6 several terroirs on the farm. So we have little gravel, we have chalk and clay, we have sand, we have 5 or 6 several terroirs. Okay. And we try to make on the best place the good grapes for the good wine. So that's we have more passions than wine making. We have track horses, we have indeed old tools in a museum. We make our bread with our own flour, with old grain varieties that we keep our seeds every year. So we try to be our environment is very interesting. We have forests, we have grass fields, we have vineyards, we have a beautiful diversity. Wine making is naturally our core business, and we try to live from the activity. But all what's around also passionates me. And the old tools, I try to collect them by colleagues and farmers. I hope we make modern and wines of today on a traditional way. But for the tools, etc., it's also important to know where we come from. And that's also, and also the technical, the quality of making of the tools of 50, 100 years ago was just extraordinary.
You're showing me one of the tools. It was a brass tool for calculating alcohol or something. I thought that was quite strange.
Yes, the sort of a little tool to, it's not really to distillate, but it was to analyze the alcohol contained in the wine by the cook point. So first you cook the water to know exactly that day with the air pressure, etc.
Yeah,
the cooking temperature of water.
Yeah, because water boils at different temperatures.
Yes, between, let's say, 97 and 100 degrees. And then you cook the wine to be sure how many alcohol the wine contains, because 50, 60 years ago, a little more, when the wine merchants bought the wine from the wine growers, they paid them per alcohol per liter.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was important for the wine grower to know exactly how many alcohol the wine contains to be paid on an honest way.
Yeah, exactly. So it was quite a nice tool. It was brass. It was well-made piece of kit.
We have the technical documentation of the tool. It was made in 1878.
Okay. Have you ever used it?
Until 20, 30 years ago, sometimes it was used to analyze the wine.
Oh, yes, really?
But not today. But
no.
But this is real. It's a collector item. It's a very old one.
Yeah, it's quite pretty. I think the one I liked the best was the barrel weigher.
The barrel weigher, yes. Yeah, because all the wines were shipped in barrels of 225 liters.
In Bordeaux, yeah.
In Bordeaux, because 50 gallons. So it's a contains where it was imported by the English when they lived in Aquitania during.
Yeah, you're saying that in other parts of France they use different sizes, but in Bordeaux itself.
In Bordeaux, in barrique, so a barrel in Bordeaux is called un barrique, and the barrique in Bordeaux is 225 liters. In the Jura or Burgundy or center of France is une pièce and it's 228. But in Bordeaux, it's 225. That's also why the bottles are 75 centiliter. Because you had exactly 300 bottles in a barrel. The wine was shipped in barrels, and when the cooper was making a barrel, it was never exactly 225. It could be 20, 24, 21, 26.
Yeah, yeah.
To have no discussion between the wine grower who shipped the wine to a client, when the client received it, if the barrel had been weighed before the expedition, there was no discussion possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were sure it was the exactly contains marked on the barrel before the departure. The farm.
Yeah, so it's a nice way of making sure everybody's happy. Would the negotiant weigh the barrel with the supplier?
No, it was very often. Usually, it was the winemaker on the farm who weighed the barrel.
Okay,
and then it was shipped.
Yeah, okay. And what other tool did we saw? We saw pumps, old day pumps.
Yeah, an air pump.
An air pump.
We have liquid pumps from beginning of the 20th century, and we have also an air pump. And you put the barrel under air pressure.
Yep.
On the top of the barrel. And with the air pressure, you moved the wine to another barrel.
Yeah.
Because there was a sort of tube, below the barrel. And with the air pressure up the barrel, the
so
top,
you push
the liquid to another barrel.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, you could move the liquid through the air pressure.
Do you know what? Do you know what the modern day equivalent of that is? Have you ever heard of a Coravan? It's a way of, you put it in the top of a bottle through the cork, and then you pump inert gas in, and then the pressure from the inert gas pushes the wine up a spout into your glass.
I know the system, yes.
Yeah, and it's exactly the same as what they're
today,
doing.
Today, it's used again in some properties, Grand Cru Classés, etc., and they are doing it with a little bit the same system, naturally in stainless steel, and they use inert gas.
Yes.
To not give oxygen to the wine and to avoid the oxidation, etc.
And very gentle as well, because there's no pumps, there's no turbines.
It's very soft, yes. Soft way to move the wine from barrel to barrel.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I've never actually seen that method before. I haven't actually seen it in use in winery. I've seen lots of, hoses that they sort of, you squish it along the hose and all sorts of quite cool ways of making it really soft, but I've never seen anybody use that method, so that's quite cool. Oh, one thing back on barrels, you mentioned that another thing about the 225 litres was something about it being able to be handled by one person.
Yes, it's also first a barrel of 225 litre, and if you add the weight of the barrel himself, you have something between 260 and 280 kilo. So one people could move it on 1 square centimeter. You can roll it on a little boat, on the carriage of a horse, in your wine cellar. You can put the barrel on the top of another one. So first, the barrel, it's a human size dimension.
Yeah, yeah. So it's 225, 50 gallons, 300 bottles, and one person can maneuver it.
But between 2,000 years ago, some people tell that the galliers invented the barrel. But the function of the barrel changed. Today, a barrel is no more a transport system or a storage system. It's a factor of better wine.
So maturation.
The micro-oxidation of the wine through the wood makes the wine different. Now, we try in Chateau Villat to not have other oaked wines. So we have, for the red wines, we have between 1/4 and 1/3 new barrels each year. Mm-hmm. We also make white wines in aged in barrel, the oak aged, or we made in 2014 also a white wine aged in acacia barrels.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that next week, the acacia barrel, which is quite cool. I haven't tried a wine from acacia yet, so I've heard about it, but I haven't tried it yet. What other equipment did you have up there? I can't remember.
A big barrel for the fermentation, completely open on the top.
Oh, yeah, big open.
Because years ago, you had barrels for the storage, and you also had big ones completely open on the top for the fermentation of red wine.
Mm-hmm.
And during the fermentation, for the color exchange, you had to push them under the juice, King, and to have a good color.
Plunging the cap.
Pushing, yes, under the juice, and that's why it was open on the top. But at the end of the fermentation, when the wine stopped or the fermentation stopped and you had no more production of CO2, then you had to put the wine immediately in barrels to avoid the oxidation. And we also have pictures in the museum explained to children or to people who are not really in touch with wine to explain in 25 pictures how you make wine.
Yeah.
From the planting of the vine until the bottling.
Yeah.
So with different ways of making wine, white, rosé, Cremant, red wine. So the different periods of the different practices and the different steps of aging and until the bottling.
Do you get many people coming to visit the museum and tasting your wines? Or
we receive on the farm, on the estate, something like 1,200 and 1,500 people a year.
Okay, so not many, but not too bad. Do they have to phone first before they...
It's better to make an appointment. Very often, especially in summer, there's always someone at home, and the phone numbers are available there. But there is usually someone.
Yeah. And do you sell much wine from home, or is it mainly through negotiations?
The sales at home is between 25% and 30% of the...
Oh, really? That's quite a bit, yeah.
Yeah, of the sales.
How do you advertise to people? Because... one of the problems with Bordeaux is you never quite know where to, there's loads of wineries around, but you never know who's available to visit. Or
maybe it was a problem in Bordeaux. Indeed, in Bordeaux you have 8,000 wine growers. Not everyone receives on the farm or on the estate, but those last year it's really going better, and more wine growers receive. And maybe it's a little more difficult in the Grand Crus. They also have some of them receive by appointment, but by the smaller wine growers, very often you're welcome.
Yeah, because you can sell them some wine, and
not only that, but also wine growers I think like to talk about the passionate way of their job and the making of their wine.
Okay, all right, Stefan. I think we'll wrap it up there, and I will talk next week about some of your wines.
Yeah, we're a pleasure.
Fabulous.